Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In March, we spent an hour with Charlotte's new planning director, Taiwo Jioba, talking about the work he and others in the city were doing to update our aging zoning codes. They were seeking to develop what they called a unified development ordinance, which included the development of place types. But as they got deeper into the work, they realized that simply updating zoning codes wasn't going to take them where they believed Charlotte needs to go. They became more ambitious in terms of what they believed the outcome needed to be, and now work is starting on Charlotte Future 2040. That's a comprehensive plan that will take into consideration land use, community design, transportation, housing, the environment, economic development, parks, and other public facilities. We haven't had a comprehensive plan for future growth and development since 1975. So what will this new approach bring us? How will it change us? And how long before the work on this plan bears fruit? Taiwo Jioba is back with us for the hour to shed some light on that. Good morning and welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you tonight.
And he has brought with him Garrett Johnson, the Assistant Director for Long Range and Strategic Planning Services for the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Planning Department and the project manager for this new comprehensive plan. I'm surprised you have time to breathe, much less be here this morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. And she has brought along the consultant on this project. Jay Rankins is a principal with MIG. That's a planning and design firm. Welcome to you.
Thanks, Mike.
Nice to have you here. So when you were here, I think it was March of this year, Taiwo, we talked about how the city had been working on revising and updating its zoning land use, which has been in place, I think, since they've been working on this. Revising it since 2013. The old ordinances have been in place since 1992. We talked about how those old ordinances no longer reflect the kind of city that we are becoming and that we want to become, and we have to continue to become because of our growth rates and demographics, etc. So when you arrived, you intended to continue the process that had already begun before you arrived here on developing this unified development ordinance. When did you realize that wasn't going to cut it?
Great, thanks. Good question. Let's go back a couple months before then.
All right.
It was at the council retreat where I actually had mentioned to the city council at that time that our center's corridors and wedges, while it was useful when it was developed, was not very aspirational, not comprehensive enough, so to speak. And so we huddled after my interview with you. Mm-hmm. Remember, Mitch Silver was in town. And,
right.
Yeah, and so he was supposed to be here for the interview, and then I did the interview. Anyway.
He was the smart one.
Yeah.
He didn't show up.
Then 2 weeks after that, we huddled. Having heard from people, and people were finding it so difficult to make a connection between our place types and our unified development ordinance, even though a lot of work had gone into it, but we felt that there were some missing pieces there. It wasn't comprehensive enough. Let's take a step back. And so staff met together with the city manager and also a couple of our planning commissioners, and we listened to city council. They kept on asking, what's the vision? And so we took a step back and said, this is what we really need to do. If our unified development ordinance will be more effective in achieving the vision of where we want to go as a city, we need to have a comprehensive vision.
So let me repeat back to you what I think I heard you say, because when we talked about the unified development program, the last time you were here, even I, and I'd read for hours before you arrived about this plan, even I had trouble understanding exactly what it was and how it was going to work, and I didn't understand place types very well. And you're saying that nobody else did either.
Well, except the planners.
So how does this change, this, I guess it's a change in direction, if that's what you want to call it, this shifting toward this new plan, how does it help people better understand what you're trying to achieve, and how does it help you achieve more equitably or more efficiently what you're trying to achieve?
The fundamental thing is this. People latch onto vision more than they latch onto regulations.
Okay,
so the Unified Development Ordinance itself is a consolidation of a number of regulations and ordinances. it's very hard unless you really live with the zoning ordinance or the sidewalk regulations or stormwater ordinance to be able to really, you know, understand it very well. Developers do because they live this life. Planners do because that's what we live. But the citizens that this will affect, for the most part, they will rather help us shape a vision of the type of community they want to have, and then the regulatory piece will come. So it's a shift. We had looked at the place types as the vision piece of it, but like I said, it wasn't comprehensive enough. It was cutting edge because other communities were doing it, but it will only go as far as land use will go. We wanted a vision that would touch economic development, affordable housing, transportation, infrastructure, parks and rec. The place styles will only touch bits and pieces of those, but not comprehensively. Okay. And so for your unified development ordinance to really achieve its goal, the comprehensive plan has to be in place to make that happen. Garrett, would you agree with me?
Definitely. I think the place types really, like Ty said, address land use and design. You read off a long list of things that will be included in the comprehensive plan, and those are all key elements of the plan and things that we need to be taking into account. Citizens are really interested in transportation, environment, economic development. All of those will be addressed more comprehensively and more in depth than the place types really could just touch on those.
Mm-hmm. The vision part of this, I believe, is where Jay Rankins from MIG comes in, because you have said, Jay, that Charlotte's been doing a lot of the right things. A lot of the right things all along, and this idea of identifying and trying to work toward place types, we're on the right track, but we were doing it without a larger vision in mind. That's what you do, that you, yeah. You help people understand or realize or identify their vision. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a big aspect of what we do. We're a planning and design firm, as you said earlier. Mm-hmm. So we do comprehensive planning pretty frequently. We actually just wrapped up, it's in draft form, Denver's blueprint, mm-hmm. Which is their transportation land use plan, and then has sort of, we spun out a comprehensive plan of that because of the visioning that we did, allowed us to do so. But yeah, I would totally agree. The place types it's something that is emerging to look at not just an individual parcel and what happens on that parcel, but looking at sort of does the sum of the parts equal more, right, than the whole kind of thing? And so we want to make sure that we're creating places, that we're creating great communities. But that little step back and kind of thinking about, how do these couple of blocks interact, isn't enough when we're talking about transportation, economic mm-hmm. development, and the environment, because we don't stop there. It's not, those types of things don't stop at the neighborhood boundaries, because we have to travel from where we live to where we want to recreate, where we work. And so... yeah, one of the aspects of what we do, and I think do pretty well, is working with the community to, I think you asked Ty earlier, mm-hmm. What did he want of the community? And I think that's the big shift, is we're saying, no, community, tell us what you want, yeah. And then we're going to figure out the tools to make that a reality.
Although this is a big small town, it's not Atlanta, it's not D.C., it's not Chicago, it is, in terms of land mass, pretty darn big.
It is, yeah.
And it's composed of a lot of different puzzle pieces. And the downtown is nothing like South Park, which is nothing like Ballantyne, which is nothing like Elizabeth. So if you're talking about a vision for the entire city of Charlotte, how the heck do you come up with that?
I would say that's one of the biggest tricks when you're doing citywide planning. I'm sure these guys can attest to that, is... it's actually, well, the goal of engaging everyone and having this really fruitful conversation is an admirable one. It's very difficult if it's not hitting home for people why they should care, right? When it gets to citywide, it's like, oh, well.
Well, that's my that was my next question, and I was going to give it to Garrett, but you can take it too.
Garrett can help as well.
Because we're going to spend an hour talking about things that are going to make people's heads explode here, but... why do we need a comprehensive plan? Hasn't this just been going along just fine? I mean, and how will this change things if we have one?
I think that the word comprehensive is key, because we do a lot of planning. We have our centers, quarters, and wedges growth framework. We've got our general development policies, and we have what's the number, Ty, 70-some area plans,
yeah,
which are great, very specific guidance for the future development of those areas. But we need to link all of those area plans together.
So we were talking when Taiwo was here before about the Unified Development Ordinance. How is this different from that?
The plan and the ordinance are really two different things, which is a kind of a difficult concept. The plan is the vision. It's the general guidance for what we want to see in the future. The Unified Development Ordinance are the rules, the regulations, really law, for how you get there.
So it's mm-hmm. what you overlay on the vision to make the vision happen.
Yeah, it's an implementation tool. One of many implementation tools, but a very important one.
Yeah, because really the regulation is the only one that's a legal requirement, right? I mean, you use that to implement the vision. Let me take a step back a little bit because you said something earlier on. You made a reference to Atlanta and another city in town. Yeah, so we are over 300 square miles in area. But our city is also the 17th largest in the United States. So Atlanta as a city has a population of 450,000.
Right.
We have a population of 860,000. So we're a big city. They always say that we're about four times the size of Boston in terms of land area. And when you look at the 30 comparable cities in the United States, Charlotte is the only one without a comprehensive plan, something that we're about to embark upon. It's the only one, of course, in the South. It's the largest city in the Southeast without one. And so this is an opportunity, really.
Atlanta has one.
God
help
us.
They
actually have one. I know, right? Every 5 years.
You didn't say
years.
It was a good one. No judgment on
that. Yeah. You know, so we look at this and we say that the best way to approach this is to do something that we haven't done before. And that is to engage the community through an equitable lens. In other words, let's bring different voices to the table to help us shape our future. Doing that is not an easy task. We know that. We recognize that. But it's not like we have any option. We really have to, because we're going to grow together, right? And so we've got to go out, get the people to start talking, and getting them engaged. Now we shape our future together.
So you have said that you wanted the Unified Development Ordinance in place by June of 2020, and the process of rezoning, I think, has been going on for 5 years, long before you arrived. And some, including those on council, have been a little unhappy with the progress that's being made, the pace of the progress that's being made. How much of this change in direction is going to set back the implementation of that unified ordinance and delay the start of that? Or will that continue as you develop the vision? Or can it continue until you develop the vision?
So there are aspects of the Unified Development Ordinance that will continue, such as the transit-oriented development. Our goal is to bring that to the council in January of next year and have an adoption by middle of next year. We are also looking right now over the next 6 to 12 months that while we push the Unified Development Ordinance's completion by some months, what can we accomplish in the next 6 to 12 months that cannot wait for the UDO, such as text amendments, such as administrative procedures? What can we do to the tree ordinance? What are certain things that we can do within the ordinance itself to allow some things to happen in the community? Understanding, obviously, that we cannot stop development, neither can we slow down the pace of growth. We still have to accommodate those while we are working on the Unified Development Ordinance. The goal for the comprehensive plan is to be done by September of 2020, and then 6 months or so after that, finished Unified Development Ordinance.
Taiwo Jayoba is the planning director for the city of Charlotte. Jay Brinkins is a principal with a consultant helping them with this vision, MIG. And Garrett Johnson is the project manager of Charlotte Future 2040, the comprehensive plan. She's been in town for a long time. We're going to talk when we come back about where we are and why we are here. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about Charlotte Future 2040, a comprehensive plan. plan that is being developed. It's a new, a kind of slight change in direction from what we talked about with Tayo Jayoba in March. He's the planning director for the city of Charlotte. Garrett Johnson is here, the assistant director in long-range and strategic planning services, project manager for this plan. And Jay Rankins is a consultant with a principal with the firm MIG, which are consultants that help cities come up with their vision plans. You have been here, I think, Garrett, for 24 years and have over 30 years of experience in all of this, in planning. And you were here when the city completed its 2005 plan, which you say was not really a comprehensive plan, but was the most comprehensive to date. Why didn't we do this then?
I think that at that time, the 2005 plan really responded to what was going on in the community. That was back in probably about 1985, 87, something like that, and laid the foundation for a lot of the planning that we did in the 1990s, our district plans and the area planning process. So it just kind of took a different approach, really responded to the growth that was happening in the community at that time and how we needed to go into some real detail about some specific areas. If you recall back then, one of the areas that was not developing was out by the university. And so there was a real push to encourage development in that area to have more balanced growth.
I know that you want citizen input on this. We talked about about this in March when you were just talking about the unified ordinances, and now you want further input on what the vision for this city ought to be. But help me understand, as a citizen who doesn't know anything about planning, why I should care. I pay my taxes, I pay my mortgage, I drive to work. Tell me why I should care.
Well, let me start off. I should care because I want to be able to go to where I shop or do fundamental things in life within 10, 15 minutes. Why should I have to drive 5 miles to get a gallon of milk? Why should I have to, you know, to drive across the city to go to work? Can I take transit to get to that place? Is there affordable housing around the corner for my grandparents, you know, for my children? And so I should care because I want a place to recreate. I should care because there should be gathering places in the community that we have. I should care because there should be fewer and fewer gaps in sidewalk to allow me to be able to walk rather than have to drive. And now these days we have scootering. Is that a word?
It is now.
I mean, so I should care, really, because the future portends different things, autonomous vehicles, connected vehicles. What's the impact on my life? And so as we chart the future for the next 10, 15, 20 years, I really should care about where my kids will go to school, where my parents will live, how easy will it be to access certain things, not difficult, but simple things in life.
We'll spend some time talking about how you make this happen once you arrive at the plan, but what you're talking about, well, what I'm hearing you say, is something that is wildly different from what we have now. You're talking about new urbanism everywhere. Where you can walk to the grocery store or the dry cleaner and not have to get in the car and be able to cross the street safely as opposed to crossing 8 lanes of traffic with no crosswalk available to you because the nearest crosswalk is a half a mile away. In an already built environment, how do you do that, number one? Number two, how do you pay for it?
Good question. How do you pay for it? let me start by saying, Mike, from what I understand right now, there's a quarter of a million people in Charlotte who do not drive or have access to a car. Mm-hmm. All right. They obviously will have to rely on public transit or have to walk or bike to where they need to go. I truly believe that we control our own destiny by making choices today about the type of future that we want. And once we have those things in place, we can start packaging projects for grant support, but you've got to have a vision before you even start talking dollars, right? If there's no vision, the question will be, what do you need the money for? And I believe that we have developers in our community right now who want to do good things in partnership with public agencies, in partnership with the city or the county or anybody else, and let's make some things happen. And before they can put their money into something or before they invest in it, they want to see exactly what are we achieving here? What's the outcome? And so this Charlotte Future 2040 is that vision. If people buy into it, I hate to use the word buy, but if people believe in it, the likelihood is that they will support us when we're going after its implementation.
Which obviously is why you want people to chime in advance of what they see is possible, although, and I was going to talk about this later, but we'll talk about it now. You've done this many times in other cities, Jay. People, not everybody comes to the table. Planners are there. Politicians are there. A few very active, engaged citizens are there, but the vast majority of people don't participate in this. So the vision ends up being the vision of a few that will impact a lot. So when these vision plans are finally enacted and they start to bear fruit or come to fruition, is everybody happy or are there winners and losers?
That's a great question. So on the first point about who actually participates, I think what we tend to see is you get the extremes. You get the people who are huge advocates and advocates for a particular, and it could be, I don't know, the bicycling community. It could be a certain style of development that people like, more involved in. And then you have people who are adamantly opposed. Mm-hmm. And so you end up with those sort of polar opposites. And so our job is to get other folks engaged in the conversation. And typically that means not just having a meeting here at Spirit Square and expecting everyone to show up. We need to go to where people are. That's online. That's out in neighborhoods. It's going to be at community groups and organizations. So we need to engage a broader array of folks and get a true cross-section. And then what I would say is, you know, the trick is the balance. I mean, you and Ty were talking about, you know, new urbanism and walkability in 10-minute neighborhoods. Absolutely cutting-edge planning and very effective in certain places. And I think as you grow, there's a necessity to have more of that. But we also need to think about the community's input and what they want. Mm-hmm. And so there's this balance of maybe there's, you know, if we're effective in getting a broad array of folks engaged in the process, we might hear that half those people don't want new urbanism. They don't want to walk someplace within, you know, 10 minutes of their home. And so then it becomes this geographic conversation. And as you said, how do you create a vision for Charlotte? I don't know that you do. I mean, I think there's probably multiple visions for Charlotte. And we're going to try to wrap a bow around that. But ultimately, there's going to be different visions for different demographics, different geographies, and we're going to come up with a plan that helps to implement that.
Well, if you were working on place types, mm-hmm. is the vision then the vision for each of those place types that somehow fits into a whole?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what the centers, corridors, and wedges plan did effectively was identified places to focus growth and places to sort of avoid growth or preserve to a certain extent. I don't think we have the luxury, given the amount of development that's happening right now, the pace of development that is occurring right now, to simply say, you know, black and white, this is where we think growth should go, this is where it shouldn't go. We're seeing it happen. We're seeing neighborhoods change. They're losing their identity. People who have lived there, worked there for years, maybe decades, can't afford to live there any longer, or it doesn't feel like their home any longer. So the place types are not meant to be a one size fits all, and that's the idea of there's all types of places. Some are going to be reflective of the existing landscape of Charlotte. Some are going to be brand new, and we're going to work with the community to figure out what those place types are and where they apply.
So you've done this before, and I think you've worked on some projects, different projects here in Charlotte before.
Yeah.
This seems like an impossible task, and it seems like certainly a complicated task. But I was going to ask you where you begin. I'll ask it. You can try to answer it if you want. But what does the process look like?
Yeah. Well, I'll start with the beginning, which is a good place to start, of course. We worked on the Center City 2020 Vision Plan.
Okay.
And then also the North Tryon Vision and Implementation Plan, which is for the northern part of Uptown. And in both of those efforts, you start, the planning process generally starts with existing conditions. One of the things that I think attracted the city to our team, and it's a full team, it's not just MIG. So we have economists on board, transportation experts, we have local experts here in architecture and engagement and communications to really help us get into the neighborhoods. But we start with that existing conditions, and I think a differentiator for us in this process, and something that is a lesson learned from places like Denver and San Antonio and Spokane and these other places that are actually experiencing pretty rapid growth right now, equity emerged from the visioning process as a priority for the community. We know from the conversations that Ty and Garrett have been having, that we've been engaged in previous efforts, that Charlotte wants an inclusive city.
How do we know that?
Through the community has told us that.
So maybe Garrett can kind of do a deep dive into that.
Yeah, I think that, you know, through what we've heard through our place type effort, as well as a lot of the different efforts that we've gone out into the community, the city did what we called Take 10, where we went out and talked to people in the community, take 10 minutes out of your day and talk to people.
So they didn't come to you. You went to them. They didn't seek you out. You sought them out. Am I being right about that?
That's part of it. I think it's both.
Because it seems to me that if you're seeking people out just randomly, then you're getting a clearer view of what ordinary people want, as opposed to the activists who either want or don't want something, so they'll come to your meeting.
Yeah, we're definitely going out to people where they are. And we've also done a lot of work more recently to try to figure out who are the voices in our community that aren't typically involved in planning processes and how do we reach those. We did a whole day workshop with people in our community that work in community building to kind of tease that out. We've also had a drop-in interactive gallery where people have come and we've created personas of the community and figured out, we identified over 150 events that we could partner with. This all information that I'll be sharing with MIG and the whole team about how we can go out into the community, create an engagement plan where we really reach people where they are and reach a more of a cross-section of our community.
I've done this program for 20 years. And over the 20 years, we have talked a lot about plans. We are a city of plans. We have smaller plans like the Charlotte Walks Plan. We have the Charlotte Bike Plan. We have the Transportation Action Plan. We have Vision Zero, which we just talked about, I think, last week, which is the city's desired or a plan that they're putting. It's an international plan, actually, that they're putting in place to try to eliminate traffic accidents between cars and pedestrians entirely by 2030. Admirable, but we'll see what happens. But all these plans we have on the table, and many of them sit on the shelf, is this going to be a plan that is implemented that will actually see the light of day once it's done? Who has to sign off on it?
That's the goal. In fact, I think what separates this plan perhaps from a number of other comprehensive plans, and Jay can attest to this, is the last piece of it where we said implementation and monitoring plan, where we will actually identify how we're going to implement certain elements over what period of time. And that's very important. We also are going to have metrics in there that will demonstrate how these are being implemented. I like to say that even our small area plans that we've had over many years, if you were to look into them, you see some things that were implemented over time. But we put a lot of energy into this effort over the next 24 months. Our plan is that when you have multiple plans, it's like you have no plan, right?
Ah.
The goal is to be able to use this comprehensive plan going forward to be that unifying plan that will touch all of these different plans that you have out there at some level. But it's of no use, frankly speaking, if we don't have those implementation pointers in that plan, right? I mean, that's very important.
Absolutely. I mean, I would, to clarify, you know, there's probably 100 plans, if you count all the area plans and then the citywide plans.
Yeah.
And we've reviewed a good portion of the citywide plans and then a few of the area plans at this point. We'll continue to do that. That's actually one of the first steps in the process, is the community has said a lot through those efforts. And so what is still relevant? What has been accomplished? What hasn't been accomplished? But I think it's commendable that those plans are as good as they are, given the fact that there wasn't an overarching kind of direction. As you said, you know, transportation touches how you get to employment and economic development. It touches recreation, and yet these plans are done in isolation, oftentimes by different departments. Sometimes, I mean, there's a great working relationship, of course, but city and county, even within a department, different folks might work on those. And then you throw in consultants like myself, and you have all these different voices and perspectives, and there's nothing kind of bringing that together. So the comprehensive plan does that. And then, yeah, this measurable piece, the trackable piece. And then I would bring it back to, not to oversell it, but the UDO, the Unified Development Ordinance. I think it's pretty unique that that is timing so well. Typically, that's a recommendation of a comprehensive plan. Mm. You come up with this big vision, you paint the picture, and then you say, and you should update the Unified Development Ordinance or code, and that takes 5-10 years in some cases.
You've done this before, and you did it in cities like San Antonio and Denver, which are growing comparably to as quickly as Charlotte is. Yeah. How long does it take? They did the plan. So how long does it take? How long has it taken for those cities to implement this plan, and what kind of progress have they made?
Yeah, great question. So San Antonio adopted their plan in August of 2016. So we're a little over 2 years out from that. What they didn't have at that point was an overarching concept of how to plan. And so they're actually going through sub-area planning now. Another city with a very large geography. And so they're just trying to get the council to agree to do a unified development code update. But in the meantime, they're doing sub-area planning. The city and county of Denver, they have a draft plan right now. It's expected to be adopted in March, most likely, March-April timeframe. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they did concurrent efforts. They did a transportation plan, a transit plan, a ped and bike plan, and they're actually packaging some of the amendments to the Unified Development Code, or the equivalent, with the adoption of the plan. But they also, as I mentioned earlier, the equity piece, I think we can learn from those places, because they had a vision that said that they wanted to be more equitable. Mm-hmm. And I think when we dissect that, kind of unpackage it, it really means that people who live and work in a place right now have the option to do so moving forward.
You're an expert on that aspect of this, and I want to come back and talk to you about that in the next segment. But we have all these other plans that we alluded to, and you've been working on this unified ordinance for a while. Do you think that the fact that we have these plans and the fact that you have been working on this ordinance, that a lot of the pieces are already in place for the vision, or will a lot of these things have to be adjusted or even scrapped as you arrive at a vision? And I have 20 seconds less.
So I'll say the short answer is yes. I think that especially the place types, we've mm-hmm. got a lot of good things in place already that we can roll into this comprehensive plan.
Okay. We have to take a break. Taiwo Jioba is with us. He's the planning director for the City of Charlotte. He's here with Garrett Johnson, assistant director of long-range and strategic planning services, and the project manager for Charlotte Future 2040 Comprehensive Plan. And Jay Rankins is here. He's the principal with MIG. And we'll talk about equity in a moment when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It strikes me as we talk about Charlotte Future 2040 Comprehensive Plan that is just now being developed, and they are seeking input from you, that maybe you'd have some input that you'd like to share with us, and you can do that at charlottetalks@wfae.org. You can also search for WFAE on Facebook, where you can watch us live this morning as well, and you can get through us to Twitter at Charlotte Talks. Garrett Johnson is here. She's the project manager for this. This plan is being advertised as one that will consider opportunities and challenges posed by Charlotte's growth over the next 20 years. How do you predict that kind of thing? How do you even know where it's going to grow, or and how it's going to grow, or how quickly it's going to grow?
I think we start with looking at the existing conditions and trends, what's happened in our community that is an indicator of where we're going to grow in the future. Transnationally, what's going on? What are we seeing that Charlotte is kind of emulating as well? Mm-hmm. And I think also we as a planning department see a lot of the development, the permitting come into our office for rezoning. So we know, like, we have a pipeline. Where's development going in the future? So we have that as well. We've got some great tools that we use. One of them is called Community Viz, which we'll be using through the comprehensive plan, that will take all that information, look at those trends, and help the community visualize different development scenarios for the future.
For instance, 15 years ago, because this is a 20-year plan, uh-huh. So 15 years ago, who would have imagined that they would be putting up these massive 5-story apartment complexes everywhere in Dilworth, in Elizabeth, up and down South Boulevard? So 15 years into this plan, how do you envision what might be in the pipeline coming? I mean, you just said where development wants to go, but how do you know what kind? How do you get people ready? Does this plan is this plan going to be used as to facilitate this kind of development or to put the brakes on some development? How are you going to use this? Does this shoehorn people into certain patterns of development that fit the vision? Does that make any sense to you?
It does make sense. I mean, right. I don't know if you want to go for that.
Sure. I guess what I would start with, and you guys please chime in, is thinking about the process. So Garrett just mentioned Community Viz. Basically, that's a scenario planning tool. Mm-hmm. So what that allows us to do is we're going to calibrate that to market conditions that mm-hmm. we know today. We can put in kind of hard code some things that we know are in the pipeline. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, there is a bit of prediction, right? Like and sort of risk associated with that. So what we'll do is work with the community, come up with the bigger picture vision that may be different by geography, as I mentioned earlier. But that could come to fruition in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And so what Community Viz and some of our other tools will allow us to do is actually assess trade-offs associated with those. So there may be a scenario that we look at that says, well, yeah, let's curb all that development in some of our historic, you know, kind of inner ring neighborhoods and focus that all on the edge and in the center. Or maybe there is one where we say, maybe because of, I don't know, the cost of steel, other things, it's difficult for us to go above 5 stories. And so what if nothing went above 5 stories, meaning most things probably wouldn't happen in Center City and all happens outside of Center City? And so we can look at trade-offs with the quality of life, the cost of living, a cost of utilities, transportation requirements, and the community can start to make informed decisions regarding that.
I mean, you hit on something very important, Mike, with regards to that. One of the things that we fear as planners is that 2 years from now, you submit this draft plan to the council, and it's outdated the moment they adopt it. You don't want that to happen. That's why scenario planning is very important. But scenario planning that is also helped by input from the community. And we know the number of things. I mean, 11 years ago, we didn't have smartphones, right? And when I look at every article that I've read now on autonomous and connected vehicles, they're telling us that by between 2030 and 2040, they will be very prevalent on city streets. Is that true? But we already see cities across the world that are building convertible parking structures because they feel that we would need less and less parking spaces. Can they be converted into something else if they're not being used? And so these are the types of things that we will be taking into consideration as we plan and project for the future. Road capacity, we need to widen sidewalks to accommodate some of the things that we see today or shrink the size of streets, you know, to allow more walkability. And so as you look 20 years from now, the world will be very different from where we see today.
And it's hard to predict.
It is very hard.
This plan, as we've talked about, we'll take into consideration land use and community design, all forms of transportation, the environment, economic development, and one thing that you mentioned a moment ago, and that is equity. And that's one of the areas that you are an expert in, equity in housing. It's one of your pet projects, I guess. It said that you, quote, strive to integrate equity into planning to address the unintended consequences of gentrification. Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot about gentrification in Charlotte. You talk about it.
So gentrification is probably associated with planning pretty frequently.
Yeah.
And to the extent that some people probably don't like planners in planning because they equate it to gentrification. Gentrification at its core is improving an area, investment being made in an area. And I think what the risk is, the unintended consequences, as you said, is that people basically, there's a loss associated with that. So it could be a loss of home where they can't afford to live in that neighborhood any longer. Mm-hmm. And in a place like Charlotte where everything is, all the costs are rising, all the prices are rising, maybe they can't even afford to live in the region any longer and they have to look somewhere else outside the metro area. It could be a loss of job or a business. Maybe the leases go up on a storefront and a longtime family business can no longer be in that place. And those two, and they're not the only aspects, but those two are very much then related to identity and sort of brand of place. And so that loss potentially. So what we can do with planning is try to get out in front of that, integrate workforce housing, affordable housing, thinking about opportunities for a small business in this larger picture. And it's the time is now. Mm-hmm. We have this, we have growth that we can leverage to ensure that the entire community is benefiting, not just the people who are developing, not just the people who are, you know, buying the new condo.
But we've talked about this on this program a lot because the city of Charlotte has very few tools in its toolkit to encourage this kind of development where you have workforce housing mixed in with upper income housing and so that people can live close to where they work, whether they're a school teacher and a fireman or whether they're a banking executive. And it's hard to do because we don't have any tools. But you say that the private sector tends to follow public investment. So is that to say if Charlotte is serious, for instance, about putting grocery stores in our food deserts, if we're serious about including workforce housing in new developments, and if we want to level the playing field by encouraging people, or private developers actually, to do things and make this a more equitable place to live, must the city lead the way? And if that's the case, how? How do we do that?
So the one thing that you brought up is the leading with the public investment. So an example, and Ty alluded to this earlier, I think you said about 250,000 people mm-hmm. do not have access to vehicles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're not driving.
So one of the approaches historically has been, well, let's develop high-capacity transit. Let's make connections between where people live and where they work and make that affordable, and they don't need a car. But what we've seen in places like with really mature transit systems, like D.C., like Portland, Oregon, is that those areas have not only gentrified around those transit stations, mm-hmm. but they've actually displaced people who could afford to live there at one point in time.
Right.
And they've actually increased in price more so than other areas. And so the idea would be value capture, and whether that's the city capturing some of that value and then distributing that.
Now you're over my head. What does that mean?
So there's a premium associated with certain public investments. So I mean, I was using the transit station example, mm-hmm. but it could be a park. It could be a new roadway. It could be the streetcar extension, you know, to the
people
west.
People want to live around
city.
Those places, and that causes the values of property to increase for both commercial properties and residential properties. So, and it does, we mm-hmm. tend to put these projects in places that have been, that need help.
Yeah, to revitalize.
Exactly. And the people who live in those places ultimately have to move, either because they're going to take advantage of increasing land values and get out while the getting is good, or because they can't, the landlord is going to sell the property and they have to get out. That's the problem. Is this plan going to address that?
Yes.
And how? How?
So one of the things that Jay was saying is that you capture the values from those increased value, mm-hmm. and then you distribute it in different areas in the community.
Socialism. Now, how do you,
not
how do, you
not
do
necessarily.
That?
I do not like using the word distribution,
he's
but then.
How do you do that?
You've got to be careful doing that. So part of the conversations we've been having internally is that the way forward for the comprehensive plan is that it serves at the as the basis for capital investments in the community. Right now, we have what we call the Community Neighborhood Investment Program, right? The CNIP. We also have, we do our capital needs assessment on a regular basis, but in the absence of a comprehensive plan. Mm-hmm. If you have a comprehensive plan in place where you've had different people at the table who are talking to you about where transit corridors, what transit corridors should be implemented next, where development, or what type of development they want, at the end of the day, you use that vision document as the basis for where you invest in terms of capital dollars in the community. Some may need more police facilities. Some may need more fire facilities,
schools. Here's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of. The city doesn't build houses.
The city doesn't.
They don't do that.
No.
But they're putting on the ballot in November a $50 million bond.
For affordable housing.
And they want $50 million from the faith community, and they want an additional $50 million from the business community. Whether they'll get that or not is a good question. But even if they get it, what are they going to do with it? They don't build houses. And you can't force developers to put affordable housing in their high-rise. So how do you do this? Particularly when you're building a city from the ground up and changing everything about it.
Remember what I'd mentioned previously about private investors wanting to partner with public agencies. But there's got to be a vision, first of all, of where we want to go. This is supposed to be that vision. Usually this is that point where residents, planners, developers, and implementers pretty much negotiate what we want our community to be like, to look like. The city obviously is not going to start building homes or anything like that, but there are other ways by which city can partner with private entities to do some good for the community.
It has been the perception, Garrett, on the parts of many people, that in Charlotte, developers get what they want. They go where they want, they get their way. And that has led to a lot of development being pushed to South and East Charlotte. It's led to the development of Ballantyne and the South Park region, which is essentially another city within the city of Charlotte. And it's led to the fact that nobody wants to build on the West Side. So how does this plan impact that, the equitable distribution of development and the equal opportunities to development on all at near Eastland Mall, on Bailey's Ford Road, et cetera?
Well, I think that the comprehensive plan will identify areas of growth, activity centers, where we want development to happen. But getting back to like what Ty mentioned, it's also going to be the guide that helps us figure out where we need to spend our capital investments. And capital investments kind of lead that private sector development. So the needs and desires on the West Side are going to be part of this as well. Where do we need to invest our dollars to catalyze development? And then if we catalyze development, how do we make sure that we're not creating places and displacing people? Mm-hmm. So that's what the comprehensive plan is going to be struggling with.
You've done this before, Jay, and you've said that implementation is the hard part. So do you have answers to the questions she just raised?
Yeah, a little bit.
You have about 2 minutes.
Okay, great. Maybe that's helpful. I would say, well, one example, so the housing fund, Denver actually, while we were developing Blueprint Denver and the comprehensive plan for Denver, the voters actually passed, or the council, with the support of the voters, passed the housing fund. They actually just doubled that fund within the last 2 weeks. And so that money that is used for that, and this is just one aspect, right? So there's the housing fund kind of aspect, which is actually, it's an additional, I mean, really simply put, it's an additional tax on development, and primarily it's on a larger multifamily development and commercial development. And so that money can be used for tax abatement, tax credits, low-interest loans, aggregation of land, which the public sector can do without having to actually build the housing. And then there's also, you know, land trust that can come into play, which is, you know, kind of looking at a house is a house is a house for the most part. It's the land and the location that is the greatest value. So land trust can actually create a mechanism for the residents to actually benefit from that. And then I think the other piece that we were talking about was another tool is where the public investment goes and sort of driving that. So that's a piece of the comprehensive plan that we want to focus on.
I have 15 seconds. I know you want public involvement. This project kicks off this month. How do people get involved? How do they find out how to get involved?
So for those who have access to the internet, we have charlottefuture2040.com. Okay. And then for those who do not have access to the internet, they can always call the planning department at the city. We have information, but we're also going to be coming to communities to let people know.
Okay, charlottefuture2040.com for more information. That's Tywell Jayoba, the planning director, Garrett Johnson, the project manager, Jay Rankins, principal with MIG. Thank you all for the hour. Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.